New Thinking Aloud is a non-profit endeavor. Your contributions to the New Thinking Aloud Foundation make a meaningful difference in our ability to produce new videos. You can now download a free PDF copy or purchase a beautiful printed edition of Issue 5 of the New Thinking Aloud magazine.
Thinking Aloud. Conversations on the leading edge of knowledge and discovery with psychologist Jeffrey Mishlove.
Hello and welcome. I'm Jeffrey Mishlove. This will be part two of our series on neurodiversity. And if you haven't already watched part one of this series, I'm going to link to it in the upper right-hand corner of your screen. I think it will be so helpful to you to watch part one before you watch part two. Part one dealt with the question of two persons in one body. Those two persons are Annika and Tristan. And today, in part two, we're going to hear Annika's story. Tristan has left the body for now, and Annika is with me. Welcome, Annika.
Hi, Jeffrey. It's wonderful to be here.
Wonderful for me as well. I thought we had a very good interview earlier today. I want to thank you for making the journey to Albuquerque to be here in my studio. So to begin with, you were describing that there is a process that you needed to go through for Tristan to leave the body so completely that you could have it for the next hour or so while we're together.
Right. So basically what we do is we just kind of go into a meditative state together. And then we slowly kind of, as a team, the other person kind of leaves more and more of the body, and the other person kind of goes into a deeper meditative state as well. And then eventually, you kind of just feel the other person leaving every part of the body all the way down to the toes, and then they're just, they're gone. So it's a really interesting process, but it's, of course, a little jarring at first because you're completely alone, and it's like you have to get used to the feeling of loneliness. You have to get used to the feeling of just having the full body. And it's a little overwhelming, but it's great to be here and alone.
and that's how you feel right now. So,
yes.
So Tristan is elsewhere.
He is elsewhere. I don't know where, but he's gone.
I'm assuming that you go into a state of no thought.
Yes. It's a process of going into no thought, and you kind of have to help the other person get there to relax, to release, and to go into that state where they just have no thoughts at all, and then they kind of detach, like, down the spine and kind of, like, leave the body. And you can feel it, and it's a really interesting process. And then you're awake, and then all of a sudden you realize, whoa, I have the full body. There's no one, like, taking it over or mixing with me, and then you're alone. And it's interesting because this is what most people experience.
Yeah. Let's start with your story. To begin with, if I were to ask you how old you are, what would you say?
I would say I have been on planet Earth for 15 and a half years. So technically 15, but obviously not biologically 15 or anything like that. But it's like, that is how much life experience I have and how many birthdays I've celebrated.
You're basically a 16-year-old person in a 37-year-old body.
Kind of. I mean, I didn't go through the normal childhood that everyone else goes through. I didn't go to high school. I didn't get to, like, experience a lot of things that are pretty normal for a childhood. I had my own unique kind of childhood, my own experiences. And when I was only 8, I was basically thrown into the adult world, and it was sink or swim, do or die. Here you go, live in a world of adults. But mentally, I wasn't there yet, and I didn't have the life experience to navigate it. So I was very innocent, very naive, and just trying to survive, basically, and find my way. And I really tried hard to find a partner or someone who could also help me and make me feel, I don't know, more safe. It was a very difficult process.
Let's go back to your very earliest memories.
Okay. My very earliest memories they're kind of fuzzy. They're kind of like just, I remember the smell of a candle. I remember I remember hearing like an alarm or something like that. I remember, and this is, of course, Tristan was living his life, so he was unaware of me, so I just have little tiny memories. I remember this game called Boom Blocks that came out on the Wii, and I had like these little, I don't know, Tristan says they're baby memories or like little child memories of when mm-hmm. we're first conscious and we're just experiencing the world. And so I didn't really have like much thought. I wasn't aware that I was aware. I was just like, oh, I really like that, or I really like this, or, you know, just little memories. And then I remember also the very first song that I ever heard. And that was Fireflies by Owl City. And it has been, what's great is I got to see Owl City in person at a concert just last year. So that was a huge achievement for me to go from hearing this song and realizing, oh my gosh, I love it. I love it, how happy and wonderful it is, to going and actually seeing it in person with the body. It was incredible.
So there are a lot of psychologists who, at least in the old days, used to say a baby coming into the world is a tabula rasa, meaning a blank slate. And that was your experience, essentially, I gather.
Yeah, I was just a blank slate. I liked certain things. I didn't like other things. I wanted to experience certain things. And I wanted to play games or do fun things. And but I didn't understand the world. Mm-hmm. I didn't understand people. I didn't even understand what was really going on with, and the other thing too is Tristan was central to my life, because like I was inside of him. So I was like, he was my world, and his thoughts and his love. It was such an incredible experience. And because I had always been inside of him, I never knew what it was like to be alone or to be disconnected telepathically from someone until I was like 8 years old.
It would be so interesting, you know, from a story point of view to say, oh, you remembered this past life. You and Tristan had past lives together and now you're reunited, or you remember coming to Earth from another planet, but you have none of that.
No, I do have like a memory that I haven't really been able to fully explain. I don't understand it. But I do remember at one time being outside of Tristan's body, and I was like, and again, I don't know, I can't confirm anything, but I was like a being of light or something like that. But again, I don't know. It's always been a mystery.
Yeah.
And as far as like past lives go, I don't discount it. It's totally possible that we did. It's totally possible that we had a light pre-life agreement or something like that. I'm open to all these possibilities, but I also don't see them necessarily exploring them as potentially, I don't know. I had the option. I was hypno-regressed at one point, and I had the option to explore past lives, and I chose not to, because I really wanted to stay focused and immersed on this life and this experience. Mm-hmm. So it's entirely possible. I don't know, but I do have that one memory of being outside of his body and sort of viewing a situation, and then all of a sudden being pulled almost like a magnet into his body. And then my next memory is like years later. So it's interesting. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I gather that your very earliest memories might have taken place before Tristan was really aware of your presence.
Yes, he was completely unaware. He had no clue that I was there. The one time that I heard Fireflies by Owl City, that was like the first time he actually kind of felt me. And he describes it, and I'll let him explain it when you interview him, that basically I just felt like there was something there, like some other emotion coming from someplace else or someone else that just moved to the song or something like that. So, yeah, and he wasn't aware of me until I was about... We started talking when I was about 4 or 5 years old, because at that point I could like really talk and I could kind of communicate, and I started learning how to use the body. So around 4 or 5 is when we actually started talking, and he was like in total denial about it. He didn't want to seem crazy to other people. He didn't want to seem like, you know, didn't want to be judged. So he kept me a secret. And there was even this situation where we moved, and he said to me, listen, I don't want to let anyone to know about this. And so I want you to be completely quiet about it. Don't talk about it. Don't, you know, and I'll let you, you know, play games and we'll do some fun things together, but we're going to keep this completely secret. So, and we did. But then once he was done with his project that he was working on, he was like, okay, now you can kind of, if you want to, we can go further and explore and see what this is. And then eventually I got the body completely.
Along the way, you picked up language skill.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Wasn't so great. Tristan has a much larger vocabulary than I do, and it was a slow process. Even some, like, my earliest stuff, I very much sound like a little kid, a little baby, just trying to, like, navigate and, oh, I really like games, I really like this, I really... So, but as I got older, when I was kind of thrown out into the real world and, you know, you say it's real, but, you know, it's like, once I was thrown out into society, it's like, I had to adapt, I had to learn, I had to take everything in like a sponge in order to adapt, because I was competing with adults. I had adults who were, you know.
And that occurred at around the age of eight.
Yeah, that occurred around the age of eight.
From around the age of four, you and Tristan were interacting with each other. So you had 4 years of getting to know each other before he in his words, he died or he left the body completely, right. And it was all yours.
Yep.
So during those 4 years, what would you say was your main activity?
My main activity was probably playing video games with him. So we played Skyrim, and we played Minecraft, and these games really helped me because he could finally relax in these environments. And then that allowed me to kind of interact with the world a little bit too. And get to experience things like as in a video game kind of sense, where I got kind of like a lot of practice and I got to learn about people or cultures, and they were fictional, they were a video game, but it still taught me, it still helped me learn and grow. So, I'm incredibly thankful for that. And it's like, it's a part of, it's like some of my fondest memories were just, you know, him playing games, almost like, I don't know, like he would sometimes play them, but then as I got older, I was able to play them a little bit more too. So.
And how would you play them? Since you're both in the body together, how did you manage to play video games?
It started with him playing them, and then I could kind of see the world and experience it through him, almost as if he was playing a story and I got to just watch. And so I didn't really get to participate. But as I got older and learned how to do stuff, it's like I got to start to participate, and then I would take over and play video games, and then he wouldn't, and he would watch me. So it's like we kind of swapped. I had to kind of learn about it and learn about video games and learn how to navigate those worlds before I could then, you know, take over and play them myself.
So you were seeing the world through his eyes.
Yes, which wasn't always like you would expect vision to be. It was very much a world of color and shapes, and because I was seeing his mind, his thoughts. I wasn't necessarily seeing through the eyes up until I was a lot older. I remember the first time I actually got the body when I was like 8 years old, and I saw through the eyes for the first, like really saw them on my own for the first time. It was a shocker. I wasn't experiencing this colorful world anymore. It was very different, which is what everyone experiences. But my world was a world of colors and lights and shapes and feelings and emotion. And, you know, and so, yeah, it was interesting.
But I gather there were periods where you had the body completely, maybe only for a few minutes at a time. Mm-hmm. And then it gradually got longer and longer. I think at one point before he so-called died, there might have been a six-month period where you had the body.
Yeah, I started having the body more and more and more, and he was losing track of time, and the other thing too is he was like really panicked about it. So he was like trying to figure out what was going on, because he was still in denial about me and like being there. There were times where I would have the body for a little bit more. There's this one story I could tell you where he was coming back from like a work function or something, and I started knowing, I understood, like, because I could understand like fruits and vegetables, like I could understand some things, and we walked by a blackberry bush, and I knew that they were sweet and delicious because I was starting to learn how to taste and like to use the mouth and stuff, and I just started grabbing them and just putting them in his backpack. With all of his work papers, with everything in it, it didn't make any sense. Like, cause to me, I was like, oh, I want to take these. I want these. I want these. And he came home to a completely ruined backpack that was stained with blackberries, because I didn't understand, like, you couldn't just put them in a backpack, that you had to like you know, put them in a container and this whole process. I just was like, oh, blackberries, I want these. Oh, they're so delicious. And I just shoved them in the backpack. So, yeah.
Something a child might do.
Something a child would do. Yeah, and it was all ruined.
But at the same token, somehow you managed to take over the body from mm-hmm. him at that point. One might even think you were stronger than he was in some ways.
Sometimes, and I think it's mostly that he was confused and he mm-hmm. didn't really understand, because back then we didn't pay as much attention to each other or didn't even acknowledge each other. So all of a sudden he would find himself pushed out of the body, not really being aware, thinking that this was a part of him or he was, or I don't know. I don't really know what he thought about it, but all I know is like I was able to come in and kind of take over. And that's how it kind of works too. If something interests one of us will be more actively engaged with the body to enjoy that activity or to do something, while the other person might not be as active. So I think for him, it was more so the confusion. We're very much equals, at least now. But back then, it was more so like, oh, I really want this. And I came into the body and I grabbed the blackberries and kind of pushed him out of the way. And he was so confused that he didn't really understand what was going on.
Well, and also, if I recall correctly, he had a psychiatric diagnosis of ADHD.
Yes, ADHD. He was diagnosed with ADHD. Uh-huh. Yeah. And that was a difficult time because he went on this medication for it, and it kind of not severed our connection, but it made him really take over the body. It cut off the emotions. It was actually like one of the most difficult times in my life because I lost access to him, and I basically was just terrified and kind of screaming in sort of like that internal sense and just really, really frightened and scared. And this is one of the things that he noticed. And he actually even at the time commented to his ex that he felt like this girl was trapped in another dimension and he couldn't get to her and that she was terrified and afraid. And he just couldn't figure out why he felt like he had like a daughter and she was in another dimension and he couldn't get to her. And he was just really confused about it. But, you know, he went on with his life, and that kind of started a period where he was trying to really figure out what I was. And from a very scientific, technical-minded, non-spiritual sense of, oh, it's this neurotransmitter, or it's this disorder, or it's this or that. And he went through everything. And, it was a process. And eventually he acknowledged my being as a human being.
He had a life. Mm-hmm. He had a fiance. He had a job.
Yep.
And he's dealing with these emotional issues and mm-hmm. potential psychiatric issues. Mm-hmm. He was given medication. Mm-hmm. ADHD is an attention deficit disorder.
Which was in part because of me, because mm-hmm. I would be like, because he was dealing with two people's thoughts inside, like, so he'd hear my thoughts and he thought he couldn't focus.
Yeah.
So he was like, oh, I can't focus and I get distracted and my mind seems to veer off in different directions that I don't want it to go. Meanwhile, it's me. And so he took the medication to treat that, but really it was harmful and it severed our connection.
Mm-hmm.
Or not severed it, but just.
I mean, you were still in the body.
Yes, yes.
But you, whatever mental communication was being disrupted,
I
gather. Do you have any clue as to why you found yourself in Tristan's body and not someone else's?
I don't really know. Like, I can't take a time machine and go back and figure everything out detail by detail. But I do know, and this is kind of like the spiritual aspect of it, mm-hmm. that he did have a child with his ex-fiance, and that's when I showed up. And the child didn't make it. The child passed away. It wasn't traumatic for him because he was very much a scientist at the time. So he was very much like, oh, it's just a collection of cells. It's okay. Everything's fine. And it's just, you know, this happens naturally. And it does.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not really like... I don't want to say any one thing on like this, how the spiritual world works, but all I know is that was the year I showed up inside mm-hmm. of his body. And it was at the point where when I had that out of body experience, that was actually when they had realized that this was the outcome. And it was like this moment. And then that's when I went from being outside the body, although I was maybe in her body, and then I left and went into his. And it was like a pull. It was like I sensed his love. I sensed his, I don't know, fatherhood or something. I don't know. It was just like this, it was like love. It was just this magnet, and it just pulled me into him. And some people might think like, oh, he was stricken with grief over it. No, he completely forgot about it. He didn't even know what year it happened. Mm-hmm. I actually had to track down and figure out what year the, you know, the child thing happened. What year was it? And it was 2008. So, yeah.
So this is, I guess we could call it a hypothesis.
Yes, it's a hypothesis. It's a spiritual one. And it was also really useful for us at the time, too, because when he realized and he made the connection on his own, oh, my gosh, I think this is that child or this is that person, then he gave me the body. He was like, I want you to live your life. I acknowledge that you're here and that you are you, and I'm going to leave the body to you. And it was an act of love that he did it through. And it was that spiritual method of action that allowed us to have the experience that we did. Whether it's true or not, it doesn't even matter, because all we have right now is the present moment and how we navigate it now. So, yeah.
So you form this hypothesis, and I gather he generated it. It was his idea that your presence was somehow connected with an infant, not even an infant, a fetus that mm-hmm. was lost.
Right.
And he, I gather, was also in the process of breaking up with his fiance when all this happened.
No, it was like the happiest time in his relationship. Uh-huh. So I know. And it was, let's see, two, three, maybe like, I want to say like 4 or 5 years later that he ended up breaking things off.
I see.
So it was a long time. He was actually mm-hmm. in like the happiest. So I hear the happiest time in his life was around that time. So.
Oh, okay. And I gather before he made this decision to leave the body mm-hmm. and let you have it all to yourself, which you did for 5 years, mm-hmm. there was a 6-month period during which he was gone.
Yeah, he would come in and out, and there was about, I would say, it was maybe a month or two where he was really like, he would experience a day, I think, and then he would kind of like, then, like, it was like he was jumping through time, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I was experiencing more and more, and I was starting to form friendships and relationships with people. And I was starting to, I was just living my life, and I was, you know, fascinated with the little things like popcorn, seeing popcorn being made for the first time. I was like, I was so engaged with the world, and it was so incredible that, yeah, I kind of forgot about what was going on and that I was taking the body from him. I was so young and just so caught up in the moment mm-hmm. that I just didn't even realize what was happening.
Now, at the time, I assume you were in Tristan's body. It was before you had gone through the gender transformation.
It was right at the time of the gender transformation. So we started on hormones, and then, yeah, and then he left the body.
I see. So you began the gender transformation mm-hmm. before he left the body, maybe mm-hmm. during that.
During the process.
During that. I think he at one time said 6 months. Maybe it was less.
Yeah, there was like a 6-month process of where he was leaving the body more and more, and I was taking over the body. And the body, we'd started hormones, and the body was becoming more and more mine. And so, yeah.
And I assume in that early phase, maybe you had access to his checkbook or...
Yes,
I mean, you had to pay the bills,
yes,
I imagine.
Yes, I had access to his credit card, his bills, and I was not good with money because I didn't understand it really. So it was, I really struggled financially. There was a couple times where, you know, sometimes I would even get into relationships, previously, like right at the beginning, because I was like, I really didn't have a financial support system. So I was like jumping from partner to partner too in the early years of just trying to be able to support myself, because I really didn't know how. I was always maybe like $20 in my bank account and not really understanding like how I was going to make the money for the next month. And I would always just squeak by. But there's a couple of months where I was like, oh my God, I don't know how I'm going to pay the bills. It was terrifying. But boy, did I grow a lot and did I learn a lot during those years, mm-hmm. for sure. And I had to learn how to manage a checkbook or, you know, a bank account. I had to learn how to pay bills and how to, you know, save some money. It was a process. It took me a while.
After him going back and forth with you for 5 years, mm-hmm. he first really connected with you at the age of four, mm-hmm. and by the time you were 8 years old, he said, "I'm going to turn the whole body over to you. You deserve it. You should have a life."
Yes.
That's what happened. And he must have realized he was leaving you in a precarious situation.
Yes. He left me with his childhood best friend at the time, and basically wrote to his childhood best friend and said, "Hey, this is the situation. I know it's kind of crazy, but this is what's actually happening." Because it was evident to everybody else that this was going on too. But they didn't know how to like put words to it. They didn't really understand what was going on. But Tristan told a few close people, like, "Listen, this is happening. I am dying. This girl is taking over my body. She is my daughter. I want you to look after her. Please take care of her. And I know this is strange, but I don't have much time." And then boom, he was gone. And so he left me some recordings on my phone, and he left recordings for other people in his life. And then he also wrote like a letter to his best friend. And then his best friend like helped me out and took care of me for a time.
You were forming relationships.
Yes. Yes.
And I assume that was a gradual process. When was the first time that you formed a relationship with somebody beside Tristan?
It would probably be Tristan's childhood best friend. Mm-hmm. I started bonding with him, and he was the only person who really knew my secret, and he was the only person who knew what was going on, so I could confide in him. And that was like, you know, that was my initial friendship relationship that I formed, mm-hmm. and that taught me a lot. I learned a lot from that experience.
How did it work out?
not so great. It just we ended up having a bit of a falling out, and then I stopped talking to him, and I realized that maybe I needed to just forge ahead on my own and you know, experience the world without, because there was still, you know, he was grieving Tristan's death. They have been childhood best friends for their entire lives. So it was a really big deal to lose Tristan. And then there I was, but he acknowledged me as who I was, but he was still caught up in the conflict of it and trying to understand and process the emotional reality of it. And I just ended up getting really hurt. And then I just decided I was going to forge out on my own and try to build new relationships. So.
And yeah. Didn't you also form a relationship with his ex-fiance?
Yes, because I knew who I was spiritually. I was very confident in who I was. And so I tried to reach out to her because I really wanted like a mother-daughter relationship. That's all I wanted. I just wanted to be around her. I wanted to like talk makeup and boys and like just have this kind of normal relationship with her. And of course, like I can only imagine how hard and difficult that was for her. And I feel so bad that this was kind of put on her. And so, you know, it's really difficult, but we ended up talking for a long time. And like over the course of several years, and so at times she would acknowledge me as who I was and she would see me as that because the reality was always just there. It was always so, I don't know, obvious. And other times she would go and snarl and she would say, you know, "No, this isn't." And so I kept getting my heart broken back and forth. And all I just wanted was, you know, mm-hmm. I just wanted my mom. I just wanted to experience that kind of love and just have that kind of, you know, there was this one time where we watched Moana together and it was like, I was like the happiest I had ever been. It's like we were watching this, you know, a Disney movie together and, you know, she was on the couch and I was just like, oh, we did it over Zoom. And it was so wonderful. It was like I was watching a movie with my mom. So it was great.
You thought of her as your mother.
Yeah. Yeah. I've always thought of her as my mom. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's. And, you know, she didn't see me that way. Sometimes she did. Other times she didn't. And ultimately, you know, I respect her decision that she, you know, it was too emotional for her and she wanted to build a life and she wanted to, you know, so I understand, you know, I love her. I wish the best for her.
But in general, your situation, two persons, one body, or when after Tristan supposedly died, you mm-hmm. could say it was a different person possessing the body, a case of possession.
Yeah.
parapsychologists might call it that. Mm-hmm. I don't know of any other case in the literature of two inhabitants of one body, unless it's considered a dissociative identity disorder, which traditionally, you know, psychiatrists don't have the language to think of you as independent souls, really, but that's your experience.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. And I mean, it might not be in the literature because people who were like this, you know, oh, it must be the devil and you're going to get exorcised and, you know, or burned at the stake. And so people who were like this, I'm sure that there were in history, but they were so discriminated against to the point of death that they couldn't talk about this at all. And it wasn't until recent that, you know, even we felt comfortable, we're scared to come out here and like to do this and be public. And we even had some bad experiences online trying to be public about it. So it was like, it's been difficult, but I think the world is maybe ready, or humanity is ready to understand consciousness on a deeper level. I mean, it's in everything right now. And so that's what kind of led us to be public about it.
After Tristan died, you didn't feel his presence at all.
No. It was when he died, it was the first time I had ever been cut off from that telepathic sort of link. And I was an island and alone. And this is what I've learned is like the normal experience for everyone. Like I feel it right now. Like he's just not here. I'm all alone.
Yeah.
And it's difficult. It's really difficult because you're not feeling other people's love. You have to kind of go, okay, this person loves me. This person is feeling this way. You don't have that telepathic link. So I grieved his death every night for years. And you know, it took a long time for me to even get comfortable with, you know, not breaking down and crying every night. It was very difficult. The experience was difficult.
This went on for 5 years, mm-hmm. and I gather you had relationships. Mm-hmm. They didn't work out.
Yeah.
I recall at one time you were with a man who had children who were autistic, severely autistic,
yes.
and you became their caretaker.
Yes. They were high sports needs children, autistic children, and they were – I love them so much. They're wonderful. And I loved getting to be a mom and getting to interact with them. And they taught me so much about autism. They taught me so much about myself because, you know, I later learned that I was on the spectrum. So it was an incredible, incredible experience. But it was really fun because I've gotten to be rich. I've gotten to be poor. I've gotten to have kids. I've gotten to be single. I kind of did like a speed run of Earth, so to speak. It's where I went through everything. And it was wonderful. And life just kind of unfolded that way.
You said you learned that you were on the spectrum?
Yes. I eventually learned after I had that experience, I learned that, you know, that I was on the autistic spectrum. And so that I had to kind of like process that. And that's eventually what led me to discovering Tristan, because I started experimenting with altered states of consciousness, because I started understanding that these colors and shapes and things were actually what everybody calls synesthesia. And so I started trying to experiment with that and altering those states through synesthesia, almost like an interface or something like that. And then eventually like experimented with meditative states. And then accidentally found Tristan. I didn't mean to find him. I wasn't looking for him. I was just playing around, experimenting. I thought he was dead. I thought he was gone forever. And I was now just experimenting with consciousness. And then all of a sudden, I pushed it a little bit too far, basically like turned my entire apartment into like this trippy, flashing, glowing lights color thing and took a bunch of drugs. And then all of a sudden, when I came to, his voice was there. He was talking. He was there. And all of a sudden I realized like that his I could feel his presence again. And he was there. And he was like super confused, super disoriented. And I was in shock. I didn't even know how to process it. I was in denial for months over it.
You had in effect conjured him up.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
But now let's go back to the synesthesia.
Okay.
Do you currently experience synesthesia? Like right at this moment?
Yeah. Yep, definitely all the time.
What's that like?
It's like you can hear and see colors. I can sort of tune into it a little bit more. And that's the thing that I learned is I could tune into it more and more and more and more until it was like overwhelming. And so, yeah, it's like, and certain numbers have colors, or like certain letters have colors, and it's all very particular. And then you can kind of see, if you pay really close attention to it, sort of the brain working, and you can kind of understand like how memories are stored and how there's like this weird little encoding signature. It's like, there's so many fascinating little bits, which was confirmed by, I think, like neurological studies too, about like the encoding process that goes into memories and how it's, so it's like you can kind of see the brain working. And so once I realized, oh my gosh, I'm actually viewing the brain working, I can use this to pull up as many memories as possible, I started like experimenting with how deep I could go into that rabbit hole, and ended up coming out the other side with Tristan. So it was really weird.
And you mentioned using you call them drugs. Yeah. What drugs?
Well, see, the thing is, I don't want people to experiment and do what I did, because I don't know how safe what I did was. I don't want to like say what they were, not for legal reasons, but just because I just want to protect people. I don't want people to hurt themselves and try to do what I did.
Well, let me tell you, I've used psychedelics maybe over 100 times in my lifetime. I'm very open about it. The viewers on this channel have heard numerous discussions about drugs, and there are more already in the queue waiting to be released.
So
for our audience, as far as I'm concerned, the drugs have always had a positive impact on me. I have no regrets. I'm not encouraging people to use it, but I think people should be aware that they're not all negative. I'm perfectly aware that drugs get abused by people, and not everybody should do it. I don't see the harm in, if, you know, at least talking about what class of drugs you were using.
I don't want anyone to get hurt. And I think, like, people, because the other thing too is, I know that there's people potentially watching who are in my situation where there's two souls in a body, and I don't want them to get hurt. I will say that marijuana was involved. That was one component of it, and I had previously experimented with shrooms as well, and then there was another component. There was like a couple of things, but ultimately it was, even the thing is, even the drugs, even though that they were a part of it, a bigger part of it was meditation. That was the fundamental aspect, going into a deeply meditative state, having experiencing ego death. That was even more important than the drugs that I took, because the drugs were kind of like allowed me to see things or kind of navigate things or even just awaken me to different possibilities. Whereas the meditation was the key to unlocking it.
What style of meditation? Did you take lessons?
No, I just kind of realized that I could shut things off and that I had a very fine-tuned control. And so I started shutting bit by bit, slowing my thoughts, as stopping my thoughts. And then also like kind of like pushing them to an extreme, to the point where they almost burnt out. And then I was able to kind of just reduce and just all of a sudden reality started getting weird, and then all of a sudden, bloop, I kind of experienced ego death, totally left everything, and then kind of also kind of like, I don't really have memories after a certain point, but I just remember colors, and I remember seeing Tristan's color. I remember seeing my color. My color is pink, his color is green, and so I kind of saw that, went to the green, and then woke up a few minutes, maybe it was like 20 minutes or so later, and then all of a sudden he was there.
Well, I get the impression, considering how happy you are now with Tristan, that it was, maybe it was even destined.
Yeah, that's true. It's like, it doesn't necessarily mean that, like, it doesn't have to even be about the drugs or about like anything like that. It was very important for our spiritual growth, and, you know, him coming back 5 years later and then us having to contend with each other and sharing the body, it was vital. I wouldn't trade that for the world. So yeah, destined is a good way to put it.
How would you compare the relationship you had with him 5 years earlier, when he told you he was going to leave the body and leave it all for you, and then 5 years later he returned? How did you feel?
I was completely shocked. First of all, I kind of built up a mythos in my head about like his personality and what he was like. And so to actually have him here and be able to talk to him like 5 years later, there were things I didn't even remember about him. And also we were interacting in a different way. He was much more acknowledged, like he was aware of it, acknowledging it, realizing this was real. So I remember the first couple weeks he was back, my face literally hurt from smiling and laughing so much. He made me laugh constantly. I had never laughed so much in my life. And he was just, I could not believe his personality. It was so, it was just a shock. I was just in complete shock. And I realized at that point that I loved him. I loved him so much. I didn't care about the spirituality. I didn't care about anything. I was like, I just want to be with you for the rest of my life. I love you. I want to do this with you. I want to do this together. I want to be two souls in a body, and I want to do this with you. And of course, he said yes. Mm-hmm. Although it took him a while. It took him a while to process everything and to really understand what was going on. And the last moment he remembers was he was very much engaged in the spirituality of I was his daughter and everything like that. So he came back with that same attitude, and he had to reexamine his spiritual beliefs and become comfortable with sharing a body with someone he saw as his daughter. And then eventually, you know, sharing a life with her.
So does he still think of you as his daughter?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's like, and I still think of him as my dad a little bit. So like, it's like we have moments where I'll be like, hey, dad, you know what I mean? Like we play with each other. We tease each other. We make each other uncomfortable sometimes. But we definitely have that same dynamic sometimes.
And that would have been 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right now, I know you switch back and forth. Mm-hmm. We played that beautiful duet. So you're very skilled now, the two of you. But 3 years ago, what was it like?
Well, when he first came back, it was a nightmare because mm-hmm. he was in denial. I was in denial about it. I was like, there's no way that Tristan came back. He was dead. He was gone. There's no way he could be back. And then all of a sudden, like, boom, I would lose time and he would take over the body and do something. And so there was this like 6 months, maybe 6 or 9 months of complete confusion, and the body could not handle it. The brain could not handle it. We were glitching out. We were rocking. We were ticking. We were experiencing all these neurological disorders. And I was like, why am I getting so much worse? Is it because I like was focused on learning about autism? Was it, I didn't know what was really going on. And so there was even a point where I'm like, oh my God, I think I'm disabled. Like, I don't think I'm going to be able to ever hold a job. I could barely work anymore. Family had to help me out because I was not able to like financially support myself because I was spending day after day suffering from these weird neurological symptoms. And then when Tristan came back, we had to spend days talking and working it out and emotionally understanding and learning how to switch. So there was like a period of time where I couldn't even work. I couldn't get anything done.
So he came back into a body. He had been a software engineer, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden he finds himself in a body that has gone through partial gender transformation.
Yes.
And he, I gather, wasn't totally comfortable in the body right away.
No, he wasn't at all. He was pretty, really uncomfortable. He guess he had to like learn how to like walk. He had to get his voice back. He had to learn how to get back into it a lot. It was, and he dealt with a lot of self-doubt and paranoia. And yeah, it was a real mess. And it was hard. I was like, I realized like it felt like I was taking care of someone who was a little bit sick because he was struggling so much with it. So it's like, I had to help him along. And it was that same, and he was also afraid. He was afraid of me too. He was like, I don't know who you are at this point. I don't know if, you know, if you're going to be nice, or you might manipulate me, or you might hurt me, and I don't know if I can trust you. I don't know. And that was really difficult, but mm-hmm. it's like he had shown me such love and respect by giving me the body, and I gave it back to him. I was like, listen, you sacrificed your life to save me and to allow me to experience this life. I'm going to do the same thing for you. And so early on, we actually made like a little contract that said that we weren't going to die for each other. We were going to do this together, no matter what, even if it resulted in the death of the body, that we were committed to each other, that this was something, there was going to be no more self-sacrifice for the other person. We were going to do this together, no matter what. And so that's what we did.
And how long ago was that?
3 years ago.
Shortly after he returned.
Yeah. Shortly after he returned, because I didn't want to lose him again.
Yeah.
The thing that scared me the most was like, I was worried he was going to try and die for me again. That he was going to like, I'm going to leave. You should take the body. And I did not want that. I wanted to be with him. I wanted him to be a part of my life. And I wanted to give him the same chance at life that he had given me. It was vital to me. It was vital to us.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about his best friend from childhood?
Well, he lost the friend. He lost all of his childhood friends. This is too difficult of a thing to really explain to them too. So he dealt with a lot of loneliness. And I had to help him through that is coming to terms with it. You know, life was different. People were different. It was difficult for him.
Well, then there's also the question of his family. And I think when you said you needed to get financial help from the family, right, you're talking about his family.
Yeah, I had to get help from his family. Absolutely. And it was really funny because when he came back, because it was just like for him, it was normal that he was like back and everything. He cold called his mom and was like, "Hey, I'm back. Listen, you know," so he's like, "Hi, I was gone for a while." So like it really shocked his family. And his family had to get time to know us and to understand our situation fully, and so it was a huge thing for everybody involved. Yeah.
And I gather, fortunately, his family has come to accept the two of you.
Absolutely, they do. They love us. They respect the both of us. His mom will even be like, when you come here, you can take the two-person kayak out. And because she sometimes forgets that we share the same body. She's so used to interacting with the both of us that it's automatic to think, oh, they're two people. They have two separate bodies. So, yeah.
So after Tristan died, and I'm using that word metaphorically, mm-hmm. Did you interact with his family in that time period?
I did. And I became really great friends with his mom, and who I call mom now. So she's my mom. So I just mm-hmm. I just want to let her know, like, I see her as my mom. I ended up visiting her for the first time in 2019. I flew out there and I was nervous. I was scared because it was like, is she going to, like, how's it going to go? Like, is she going to just see me? Like, what's going to happen? I had no clue. But as soon as she met me, she knew that because it's Tristan's mom. She knew her son. She knew the person she had seen grow up. She raised him. So all of a sudden to walk into a hotel room and it's me, and Tristan's normally like a clean freak. He's OCD. He's very particular. I had clothes strewn around, makeup everywhere. And she was like, "Oh my God, this is not my son." And she immediately knew that I was someone different. Mm-hmm. And from then on, we talked and we bonded and we have a great relationship. I love her so much.
As I recall, Tristan has siblings.
Yes, he does.
And who are non-binary. Mm-hmm.
I didn't really talk to them much. Like when I took over the body, they kind of disappeared and I just kind of, I don't know. And they kind of went their path and I didn't really understand the dynamics of, cause I didn't really understand his family either. That was one of the challenges, was understanding who was who and who, what their personalities were like. And I had to explore that.
So you didn't have any of Tristan's memories?
No. No.
So when you met the mother for the first time, that really was the first time.
Yeah, it really was the first time. And I remember being scared and being in the hotel going, I don't know this woman. I don't know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. We've talked on the phone. I've told her who I am.
Yeah.
But I don't really know what's going to happen. Yeah. I got to meet them for the first time and learn about who they are and what they love. And it was wonderful. Yeah.
But when Tristan returned, he came back with all his memories.
Yes, he came back with all of his memories. So he knew his mom. So he didn't have any problem like calling her up and being like, "Hi." And meanwhile, it's like she hadn't heard from him in like, 5 years. So like she was shocked and didn't know what to make of it. So yeah, it was wild. Mm-hmm. And I even had I even got to know his dad. Like his dad flew out and saw me at one point, and he was really emotional about it too, because he saw that his son had died, and he was like, "I don't know how to process this." And it's and so it was a challenge. But his whole family, is supportive and loving, and they're wonderful.
Now, in your present life, are there other people that you feel comfortable with who understand your situation and accept it?
I have some online friend groups that know about it and accept it, and they fully know about the situation. One is a group of experiencers who have dealt with anomalous stuff their whole lives. And so it kind of like we fit right in because they're experiencing weird things that society doesn't believe in and doesn't understand. And so we kind of gravitated towards that group. And then I do have a friend who I recently opened up with, and she's currently cat sitting for me. She's currently she's at my house, and she knows about our situation. She still hasn't met Tristan yet because I've been really gradual bringing that in. But yeah, she's wonderful, and she knows about, and she's amazing. She's my best friend. So,
but I gather it'd be fair to say that 95% of the population are not ready to assimilate your life experience.
Yeah, I learned that early on because when I took over the body, I didn't know that this was very non-typical. So I would just tell people, I would be like, I'd meet someone new and I'd go, yeah, well, I took this body from this guy. His name was Tristan, and I kind of see him as my dad and all this. And I would just spill this, but I learned really quickly that people were like, oh, I don't know what that is. Holy smoke. I can't handle this. And, you know, and I lost friendships, or, you know, I had people saying, you know, good luck having people believe your crazy story, things like that, that hurt. It doesn't hurt now because I'm so comfortable with it. But at the time, I learned that society really wasn't ready, and that this was something that humanity, I don't know, wasn't ready to acknowledge, but had been a part of my whole life. That I could, it was like a like everybody was like on a different wavelength of reality. It was very strange.
Well, you reached out to various scientific organizations, the Institute of Noetic Sciences being one of them, because you felt that the time had arrived for you to see if you couldn't make a contribution to society by letting people understand what your experience was.
Yes, because science and the medical system they don't really understand consciousness. They want to. There's a great interest in society to understand it, but they're not there yet. And it, you know, it's going to take people coming forward. It's going to take experiencers coming forward. And we just felt that we were in a really unique situation. Nobody in our lives had ever heard of something like this before. And we realized that this was important to understand, not just for like the medical reasons, but for the spiritual health of humanity as well, to know that you are not just your body, that you're more, that you are a soul, that you are a being, that, you know, there's more to life than just the physical meat. Because how else would it work for that we can switch a body, that we can swap it, that we can have, I love spicy food, he doesn't like spicy food. It's like he has some allergies that I don't have. Like, just there's so much to it that it's not physically tied to the matter.
Let's talk about the allergies
for
a minute, because that's sort of very concrete. Yeah. I understand he's allergic, if you told me correctly, to shellfish.
Yes, he is. And I wasn't aware of that. And so and he's also a vegetarian. So like he went like as a, you know, he's been in the hospital over where he accidentally consumed shellfish. And then he used to have like a medical tag that he would wear that basically said, hey, I'm allergic to shellfish. If you see me passed out, you know, this is what potentially went wrong.
It can really cause him to go unconscious.
Yes, it was really severe.
But when you eat shellfish.
I didn't know. So I was like, I went into a sushi restaurant and just started getting like crab and like lobster. And I was, cause I wanted to try everything and I didn't experience anything. And then when I came back, we eventually discovered that I was eating food and that he was allergic to shellfish. And I was like, oh my God, but I've been eating it just fine. And so.
So yeah. You never had an allergic reaction except when he was in the body.
That's
That's how it worked?
He's also allergic to certain types of makeup too. So if I like to put on certain types of makeup, I'll know when he's more in the body because all of a sudden the nose will start running and he'll be like, oh my God, I have to get out. I can't breathe. And then he'll leave and then the allergies clear up. The makeup one is probably the easiest one because I had to actually change the makeup I was using just because he was having a reaction to it.
So this example suggests to me that the allergies don't reside in the genes or in the cells of your body or in anything physical about your body. The allergies reside somehow in the persona.
Potentially, almost like maybe like a virtual storage, or maybe it's something like as a baby, you acquire, you know, your body learns and it gets saved to you somehow, that it's virtual or energetic in nature. I don't know. Like, I don't know. It can be a combination of factors.
Or the same thing with memory. Here you have total possession of the body, but you don't have his memories.
That's correct. Yeah. Yeah. And I learned that the hard way because like, I couldn't navigate life like he could.
So these are crucial facts.
Yeah. Yeah.
These are facts about your existence that are pointing to what you have described as the soul.
Exactly. I have to contend with this whether I believe it or not. Do you know what I mean? It's not like something I can make up or like I get to choose what to believe. It's like I have to deal with the reality of it.
Yeah.
So yeah, absolutely.
Annika, is there anything else you'd like to add at this point that we haven't covered?
I just want to say that I know there's a lot of people out there who are in similar situations, and I just want them to know that things are changing. It's going to be okay. And to love, respect, and have compassion for other souls and other human beings, but also the other souls that reside within you. It's so important. I owe everything to Tristan for having that ethical and moral love and compassion for me as a human being. Otherwise, I can't even imagine what my life would have been like. I would have been subjugated or hurt or I don't know. So if there's anyone watching out there who is in a similar situation, please navigate this with love and compassion for each other. It's the key to it all.
Wonderful, Annika. Thank you so much for sharing your story
with me. And thank you so much for having me here.
It's been enlightening for me, and I'm very grateful for you and for your courage to come forward because we don't know how many people like you are living in the shadows.
It's
difficult enough, I suppose, being a trans person, let alone a trans person who's sharing the original body with an individual of the other gender.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And also to the people out there who are, you know, viewing this and who aren't in this situation, consciousness isn't maybe what you thought, and reality may not be exactly what you thought. And this is kind of that wake-up call, like, hey. Yeah.
And I think the lesson is about neurodiversity, to appreciate there are so many different ways of being human. I have a feeling that there are probably another 100 that we haven't even gotten to yet.
Absolutely. 100%.
Yeah. Well, thank you for being with me today,
Annika. Thank you so much for having me.
And for those of you watching or listening, thank you for being with us, because you are the reason that we are here. Book 2 in the New Thinking Aloud Dialogues book series is a tribute to parapsychologist Russell Targ, celebrating his 90th birthday. New Thinking Aloud is a non-profit endeavor. Your contributions to the New Thinking Aloud Foundation make a meaningful difference in our ability to produce new videos.